has joined.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
Is it just you?
I think so. I didn't hear any other dogs or dings. I'm still tired.
Well, I'm glad you had a successful meeting.
Malka.
Good afternoon, Malka.
Good afternoon.
So we are beginning our class on the evolution of Hashem. We were starting lesson 3 today. We'll start with the L'shem Yichud. You know there is no handout on the Hashem website, but there is a safer that we are reading from, and that's available on Amazon, either in hard copy or in the, what's it called, the Kindle. V'shem Yichud Kudsha Barichu Ishkin Te Bidkilu Urchimu Utkilu Utkilu Urchimu Le'akta L'shem Yud He Bavav He V'yichuda Shalim B'shem Kol Yisrael Limud Torah Mitzvah La'asok Torah Mitzvah V'ayhino Amadunai Elohinu Aleinu Ma'asei Yadeinu Kanadei Aleinu Ma'asei Yadeinu Kanadei. Lesson 3. The higher dimensional plane, another word for which is heaven, exists as a field of energy. Information is imbued directly into the essence of whatever is there. Knowledge there is thus never external, but rather it is always internal and an integral part of the whole. What is the meaning of internal and external when it comes to heaven? Or even in what is the meaning of internal and external when it comes to the physical world? And they are different. In the physical world, internal is the soul. External is heaven. Excuse me. External is the body. In the spiritual world known as heaven, their internal is the consciousness of knowledge, of something that you're living. It's not something that's external to you. It is your essence. That knowledge becomes you. Information is not there. There's only knowledge. Information, as it enters you, becomes knowledge. It becomes part of who you are. That's very difficult for people to truly understand. Here in the physical universe, we exist under a completely different set of natural laws. Knowledge is external to us, blocked from us by our physical forms and our physical limitations. If we wish to acquire knowledge in this universe, we must go out and acquire it. This is the process of education. But even education doesn't acquire knowledge. Education acquires information. There's an extra step in transforming information into knowledge in our physical world. We can learn from all things, from life, from nature, as well as from schools and books. However, the nature of acquired knowledge in the physical world will reflect either the integral wisdom of the higher dimensional plane of heaven, or the externally acquired knowledge of the lower dimensional plane of earth. These two types of learning are the metaphorical fruits of the two trees, one of life and the other of knowledge, good and evil. I think this paragraph is clear after my earlier comments. Knowledge of the tree of knowledge, good and evil, is therefore information about this physical universe and the laws that dominate it. Knowledge of the tree of life is information about the higher dimension, the source of everything here, and our true home for both our souls and our original bodies of life. Now here comes the problem. As long as we are here in this physical universe, its magnetic attraction keeps our minds focused on the realities of this dimension. The nature of this universe and the physical forms that dominate here, they keep our physical brains focused on physical realities through the senses experienced by the brain. However, as we know, there is much more to the human mind than just the conscious awareness perceived by the brain. For although we were sucked down the black hole out of Eden and into the physical universe, there is still a part of us that remains up there in our source domain. We call this part of ourselves our higher selves. We experience this within our lower selves as the unconscious part of the human minds. It's important to remember this idea that the mind is different than the brain. The brain is physical. The mind is a level of consciousness. The mind receives from the higher levels. It receives from our higher self. And that reception called higher self is actually our unconscious mind. Our minds are split between a conscious and an unconscious because it exists simultaneously in two different dimensional planes. That's an important statement. We think it's normal for the unconscious mind to not be accessible to us. But in reality, if it was all one world, one plane, then our unconscious would be totally revealed. And that is what our job is, part of our job. The problem is that awareness is cut off from one another, meaning that heaven is separate from earth. Our conscious minds are essentially trapped here in this physical domain, and we grow to believe that this reality is the only reality. We thus live here, suffer here, and die here, all subject to influences and forces beyond our conscious control. This, of course, is not true. Continuing. This is the result of the eating of the forbidden fruit of the tree of knowledge. We are all still suffering from this poison, all the while
has joined.
We embrace the conscious reality of the physical world and perceive it to be dominant, actual, and primary. However, as we know, there is a cure for this ailment. And it is an ailment. The way out is the same way we got it in, only we must do it in reverse. As we embraced this physical reality and placed it primary in our consciousness, the way out is to detach from it by learning how to experience again the higher reality in which we are now entrapped. We have to learn how to eat the fruit of the tree of life. This is the Torah. One of the methods of detaching from the physical reality is called Jewish meditation. In fact, I don't think there is another way. However, the Torah itself, like Adam before it, has fallen into the husk and shell of this world. This was a result of the sin of the golden calf, which the Kabbalah called a second eating of the forbidden fruit of the tree of knowledge. That's the first time I think we've ever said that. It's actually true, and it just was never appropriate to say it up till now. But the sin of the golden calf caused the Torah to change. It caused the Torah to change as it entered the physical world. Originally, the first tablets of Torah that were given to Moses, they were given in a clear and pure form from the higher domain. This original form was not the form that we know, and it's not the form we see today. Moses would have given this form to the children of Israel, who would have been fundamentally transformed by it. As an aside, but it's really not an aside, it's significant to think that we have been taught that the Torah never changes. That's the tool of Satan. That's the change that took place in the Torah, that we would be allowed to be taught that false statement. The Torah does change, and to think it does not is being trapped in the physical world. And we have all been trapped into this physical world with these kinds of limitations and untruths. The result would have been that Moses would have then been the Messiah, and the redemption and the messianic age would have come right there and then to our world. The pure fruit of the tree of life would have us to transcend the limitations of the physical dimension. However, as in Eden, the original plan was thwarted. When Moses later brought down the second tablets, they were not the same as were the first. And like Adam, Torah too was now trapped in a physical form. Just as Adam, which is humanity, must learn to adjust the way we think, so too we must learn how to adjust the way we come to study Torah. As long as Torah learning is something done externally, from the outside, from books and teachers, this is the supernal knowledge of the tree of knowledge. Yet once we learn to experience knowledge from within, channel down the tether or the ladder from the higher self within the unconscious to the conscious mind, the Torah becomes the fruit of the tree of life. This paragraph is very important. How do we study Torah? The majority of the Kabbalistic yeshivot, the schools of Kabbalah, have taught the Kabbalah after a base of knowledge is created. I really should say a base of information is created in the person. It's on that base of information that people can develop knowledge. But all of that is coming with the consciousness that it's external. It's not talking about knowledge. It's talking about information that we transform into knowledge. How do we learn it for it to be direct? How do we learn Torah without transforming what becomes our essence? This is what requires the student of Kabbalah to do the meditative tools, to use the meditative tools. If one will study on the recordings, by listening to the recordings of the Chevruta study between Chai, an Israeli living in Jerusalem, living in Germany, and we study the parasha from the Zohar of Bereshit. We have been doing now this for about 3 months, and I've mentioned repeatedly that these classes are really important to be listening to. I hope you will begin to listen to them. You will have to go back probably about month of October.
Has joined.
5 months that Kai and I have been studying one-on-one. And there are tremendous pieces of information that are being transformed into knowledge. There are tremendous pieces of knowledge that you receive directly that become part of you if you listen. The main conflict between Kai and myself, and it's not a negative conflict, he's hungry to learn, but he does not come. Even though he is spending his life studying Talmud, studying Torah, studying different writings of different sages, as much as he does that, it's always been a blockage to receive the knowledge directly, because it's all been intellectual. And you see that effect clearly in those recordings. That's why I recommend that each person listen to those recordings. Continuing. Just as Adam, which is humanity, must learn to adjust the way we think, so too we must learn how to adjust the way we come to study Torah. As long as Torah learning is something done externally, from the outside, from books and teachers, this is the superficial knowledge of the tree of knowledge. Yet once we learn to experience knowledge from within, channel down the tether or the ladder from the higher self within the unconscious to the conscious mind, this is the fruit of the tree of life. You've heard me say repeatedly how you need to just wake up one morning and have information. but I shouldn't say it's information in this process. You receive knowledge directly, and all of a sudden it shows up in your mind. All of a sudden, I speak words to my students that I never heard before, but I know their truth. That's the intuition. That's receiving knowledge directly from heaven. It happened. I've experienced it. And I want you to learn to experience it yourselves. Continuing. Therefore, the learning of Torah is not what counts, but rather how Torah is learned that counts most. Tikkun, to repair or rectify, depends upon our realignment with our higher source and the awakening of our higher faculties of knowing. This requires of us a comprehensive shift in the way we think and in the way we must come to view the world. Higher dimensional Torah study is built upon first training the mind to integrate the conscious with the unconscious and thus reconnect with our higher source. Only in this way can Torah be studied properly. Mind you, these sentiments are no new revelation. They were expressed close to 200 years ago by the great sage Rabbi Eliyahu, the Gaon of Vilna, who stated, as long as one does not understand the secret, even the simple will not be clear. He was saying, if you don't study the Kabbalah, you can never understand the Peshat. Torah is by no means just a book of words. It is not a document written by a human being from this or any other dimensional plane. The Torah exists independently of our universe and only exists in this universe in a form that provides for its relative immortality. Read that phrase carefully. Relative immortality. Isn't immortality forever? Isn't it everything? The answer is no. This is why it materializes as a book, one written with very specific rules, in a very specific way. When the rules are followed, the book can be infinitely reproduced without any loss to its original form, content, and character. A book, therefore, provides the most stable and immortal form and structure for a thing in this most unstable and mortal dimensional plane of decaying matter. Now that I have described why Torah takes its present form, let us discuss its true and original form. That's the end of lesson 3. Does anyone have any questions? Going on to lesson 4. There is an ancient teaching taught in the name of the founder of the Hasidic movement, Rabbi Yisrael Baal Shem Tov, that in the beginning, even prior to the creation of our multiverse, Torah existed as a conglomeration of independent, vibrant, living letters. Only as creation proceeded and events occurred here on earth did specific groups of letters combine to form words and thus give us the narrative that we have today. This lovely tale describes to us a very profound reality. Yet in order to understand it, we must extract the true essence of this teaching from its religious and mythical storybook style rendering. As the Torah states, in the beginning, Hashem created the heavens and the earth. Bereshit bara Elohim et hashamayim ve et haaretz. The verse states that Hashem spoke and said, let there be, and what he said there was. We all understand the fairy tale element of this. Now let us extract the underlying proper meaning. In the beginning refers to a period outside of our present concepts of space and time. In this period or place, all that existed was pure energy of a kind that we cannot describe simply because this type of energy is something beyond the boundaries of our dimensional plane to embrace. Therefore, we have no exposure to it, and thus no experience with it. Within this original primordial energy, which the ancients called the Heliuli, the primary matter, there existed some form of knowledge, dot, and information that directed it to act in accordance to a preordained plan. This is a very little understood paragraph. You need to spend time meditating on this paragraph. If something started out as Euli and then became Dot, there was a transformation. Euli was information, Dot became knowledge. But the Euli can come directly without the interpretation or the transformation into knowledge. Now, obviously, inert material with no force acting upon it cannot just simply get up and do something by itself. Therefore, obviously, this prima matter was somehow programmed to define for it what it was, a sense of identity. And what it is supposed to do, a sense of purpose. These ingrained elements are the only factors that can transform something inert and immovable and make it move, make it interact, and thus bring about change. Thus, the initial force or form that is the foundation of all space and time, had to be by definition intelligent. It is this intelligence that defines life. Therefore, the entire fabric of primordial space, time, was alive. It was conscious of itself, and it had purpose. In its original primordial stage, the initial force has no form or structure as we understand the concepts. However, it has the ability within it to reflect upon itself, and thus following an ingrained pattern or knowledge materialize a process that enabled the elements within it to interact, combine, and bring forth forms of manifest reality. Always remember the term form represents bodies in our world. While science might call this force or these forces the laws of nature and proclaim that they just simply acted on their own without method or plan or direction, such an understanding is itself void of any understanding, any intelligence, or any reason. To think that something as complex as the multiverse would all of a sudden put itself together for absolutely no reason and without any plan slaps science and natural law square in the face. The great natural law of entropy clearly shows that complex systems have by nature to always break down into something simpler. How then could the original simple singularity of existence all of a sudden contradict the natural law that it itself sets in place and materialize complexity out of simplicity? Reality glaringly proves that existence itself is alive, intelligent, and very much purposeful. Within every subatomic particle, there is information that gives it its identity and defines for it its purpose and function. This indwelling knowledge, dot, in which we call the divine presence. In Hebrew, this is called the Shekhinah. This exists in everything and everywhere. However, its inner core of power remains concealed very much like the energy inside the nucleus of an atom. As we know, with atoms, only once the atom is opened, can its inner force be released. When this occurs today, we call it an atomic explosion. All the devastating destruction that comes from one atomic bomb all comes from within the nucleus of one single atom. Extrapolate and imagine now how much energy there must be in the nearly infinite number of atoms in this one universe alone. Each one has the power of an atomic bomb in it. Altogether, they contain a force indescribable and unfathomable. The force of the divine power concentrates, puts into our universe that keeps it alive and on course, all in accordance to the higher design. Unleashing aspects of this power, as we know from modern science, can be very destructive. Yet if there is a safe, more natural way to connect with it and healthily use this concealed energy, we could benefit immensely. There is indeed a way, maybe not yet understood by modern science because of their secular and atheistic prejudices. However, this way of contact has been understood for centuries by sages in Israel and in the world at large. The way to connect to the inner energy concealed within everything in the universe is simply to speak to it, energy to energy. Does this sound confusing? It should not. Human consciousness is essentially energy. The energy inherent within everything is also energy. They are two not so different forms of the same thing. All we need to learn is the language of the connection. This is a special energy language of a sort. One who can learn to speak it can thus communicate with everything that is energy-based. This includes the literally everything in the known universes. The energy language of which I speak is what we have come to know as Torah. That's the end of class 4. Does anyone have any questions? We will not have enough time today to finish the next chapter up in 5. So we will stop here unless someone has a question. There are 2 more classes, the Deep Zohar at 4:30 West Coast time, and an essay by the Ari at 7 p.m., our late class. I hope you'll join us one or all of these classes. Shalom, God bless you. Please, utilize the Hebrew meditative systems. Concentrate on the letters. Bring those letters into a place where you are not harmed, into a place where you desire to grow, into a place. Shalom Gadol to all, one and all. Shalom.
Shalom, thank you.
Shalom, thank you.
Shalom Gadol.